My wife and I have been doing, I've been in radio and television for, you may know me or I don't know, you hear me do the introductions to Chuck Missler's daily show, and I have my own national talk show and co-host a financial show. What is all this mess on the... as best we can tell, I'm a Jewish boy that was adopted by a Lutheran father and a Roman Catholic mother, Irish Catholic mother. As a result, I know both guilt and shame. Okay, between the two. And my sisters are native-born Germans. We were a patchwork family. And I lived in Libya for a year, which was my interaction. Yeah, strange, isn't it? Interaction with... where's the clock? You're at 4:32. Okay, I know we'll bomb out here. He's telling you all to go and get something to eat. I'm going, wait a minute, I'm speaking. What do you want to... What is this, you know? But did anybody ever see the movie with Jimmy Stewart and Doris Day, The Man Who Knew Too Much? Remember that movie? Great, great Hitchcock film where an American diplomat stumbles onto an assassination plot in London, and to keep him quiet, they kidnap his boy in Morocco. And then the whole plot of the movie is they try to find... the boy, and they're in the middle of this assassination plot, you know. Well, we saw that when we were in Italy. In Africa. We were, I was a boy, and we went to see the movie down at the airbase where we were stationed, but we lived in downtown Tripoli. We lived in Garden Center. And anyway, so a couple of days later, this British family that lived up the street from us, you have to remember that the people that did the kidnapping are British in this movie. And the people came, they called down, and they said, we're going down to the Mediterranean. Would John like to go along, you know? And my mother says, they want you to go with them to go swimming. And about 5 minutes later, Mom can't find me anywhere in the house, you know? So she finally finds me under my bed and wants to know what I'm doing down under there. And I said, let's put this one together, Mom. I said, I'm an American boy. We're in an Arab country. They're British. You figure it out. Okay. I saw the movie. I know what's going to happen next, you know. So I wound up going swimming that day anyway. But from there, we went to Germany, adopted my sisters. And my grandfather lived with us. He was German and spoke German. He'd been born in Germany. We had a German maid. My sisters only spoke German when they came to live with us. So I got to love German and the German culture, die deutsche Kultur. Learned how to speak it. And spent the rest of my life figuring out why the Holocaust happened and why Nazi Germany went the day. How could a civilized culture like Deutschland, like Germany, go the way it did? Both psychologically, philosophically, as a culture, and everything else. And then I began to become aware of the fact that we're following the same steps in the West right now, today. Okay. And people don't believe that. And I go, well, okay, we've completed this step. I'll talk about this now. So about 20 years ago, we started to cover persecution on the show. What changed my mind on it was I had Richard Vornbraun, Tortured for Christ, the Romanian pastor, Jewish man, and he came into the studio and I spent 2 hours with him that day and pumped him full of information. He changed my mind. A friend of mine who was there went to work for Voice of the Martyrs. And then I began to realize how important persecution was on a global scale. When we started talking about it, there was nobody else on the radio talking about this. This astounded me. And when you went to pastors and said, we need to talk about persecution, this is important, they go, people don't want to hear about that. I thought, wait a minute. It says in the scriptures we're supposed to worry about those in chains like we're in chains with them and to pray for them and to help them. What's wrong with you? And it just did not enter. People didn't want to hear that. They weren't going to do that in the churches. So what I've done here, I was just asked to talk about the anatomy of persecution. I've been asked to do another speech in another place, and I'm avoiding doing it because it's real gut-wrenching about where we're headed as a culture, and it'll scare everybody. They'll all run out. If you understood what's even going on in our country today, how many Americans are being arrested for stupid crimes and being put in jail, crimes they didn't even know commit. You, all of you sitting here are probably a felon. You don't even know it. Okay? And simple things. You know, did a piece of mail come in, junk mail come in for your wife or your husband? You said, oh, he doesn't need that. You threw it in the trash. Just committed a felony. You interfered with the U.S. mail, okay? Have you spent $10,000 at the same supermarket over the last 10 years? Did you file the required Treasury Department forms? Nope. You're a felon, okay? This is how bad it has become in this country. People are having property seized, going to court, over stupid stuff. At the same time, we have a trend coming towards us whereby secularism is trying to push Christianity out of the marketplace of ideas. Not so much Judaism in the United States, but Christianity. And it's using hammers like Islam in Great Britain as a hammer against Christianity, having two different standards for how both religions are handled in the press, which has been my profession for over 40 years. So this is where we're headed. Let's talk about persecution, okay? A persecution is a collision of worldviews. Since we have a philosopher here, the German word is Weltanschauung, okay? Welt, world, an, at, schauen, to look, ing. Okay, it's a way of looking at the world. And everybody has a Weltanschauung. You all have one, a world vision. It's how you, the assumptions you believe to be true about the world, the nature of the universe, God, all of these things. And it's a collision of worldviews. That's almost always what causes persecution. There are two types of persecution, formal and informal. And these are important distinctions. Informal persecution is when it involves rejection by your family because suddenly you have switched a religion, say, for example, or you've switched a worldview, or you've rejected Christ, or whatever it happens to be. There's a tension there, and that's where the collision comes on. So it's in family, in society, in the marketplace of ideas, and in businesses, and even in churches. You know, many of the people in the former Soviet bloc and in Nazi Germany who turned people into the Gestapo or the KGB, you know what they were called? Pastor. And this is important to remember for reasons that Warmbrand said in just a second. Now, formal persecution's a little different. By the way, sometimes the informal can be the worst because you have to live or work with people who are rejecting you or trying to coerce you back into their faith from the faith that you left and came when you came to Christ. Formal persecution has five stages, and formal persecution usually happens when suddenly the Weltanschauung, the worldview of a culture, changes. It changed in Nazi Germany over a very short amount of time, probably over the course of 10 years following the end of World War I until the German Nazis came into power in 1933. It was another almost a decade until 1942 in the Wannsee Conference in January of 1942 when the final solution was planned at a hunting lodge on the northwest side of Berlin called on the Wannsee, which is a big lake in Germany. And it took that long. The biggest problem that the Jews in Germany had wasn't the Nazis, it was denial. It was denial that they were going through a paradigm shift and that things were changing and that action was required. Today in this country and other parts of the West, we have denial as well. Okay? And you see, when you go through a paradigm shift, people don't recognize what this paradigm shift is. That the rules that you and I grew up with are shifting. And the new generations coming up are believing in new ideas. Frankly, they're a rudderless generation as I see them right now. And I'm trying to reach them. I'm trying to reach out to 20-somethings and say, you've got to understand, you don't know which way you're going right now. Okay? Because they think that because they can get on iPad and iPhone that they can do it. And I have mine. My whole business requires that we be technologically current. But I remember we took my son in Baton Rouge. He's doing his graduate work there at LSU. Go Tigers. I had to say that. I'm sorry. And we get down, you know, to Baton Rouge 2 years ago. We drove down there from Coeur d'Alene. That's why this is flat, sitting in the car for that many days. Okay. And I said, okay, how do we get to the truck rental place so we can take this truck back with all this stuff, you know? And he said, well, I don't know. So he's sitting there on his iPad, you know, iPhone doing this, you know, zooming in, zooming out, and everything else. I said, wait a minute. We went to a quick stop. I walked in, found a map, got it, dragged it out on the hood, stretched it out, and said, okay, this is Baton Rouge, Louisiana. This gives you an overview that your iPhone will never give you. It's called a paper map. Learn how to use this thing. Notice how some streets run north-south, some run northwest-southeast. And in Baton Rouge, the streets change names every couple of blocks. It will drive you totalmente crazy if you try to drive around there, you know. So he called to tell me that he was driving home from New Orleans from a conference there, and there was a big old alligator sitting by the side of the road. He said, it's definitely not Idaho anymore. Okay, anyway, formal persecution. You know, we have to keep this light because this is a real rough subject. Formal persecution. Number one, identify the target group. This is perfectly what happened to the Jews in Germany. You have to identify the target group by their physical characteristics or by their belief systems. Number two, you have to marginalize the target group. And what you do there is you push them to the edges of society so they don't have access to the organs of social discourse, the press, broadcasting. Today it would be the internet. The internet has made that very, very difficult. It's also provided a major source of information leaks into the Islamic world. It's very hard to control what comes down on satellites and other related areas. Third, once the group is marginalized and can't defend itself in the public arena, then you vilify the group. And that's what the Nazis did. They just poured out a nonstop stream of propaganda against the Jewish people in Germany. And of course, they were riding on a bedrock of anti-Semitism that had been riding through Western Christianity all the way back to St. Augustine. But it really didn't start there. It kicked up a little further later on as the Gentile church began to drift further and further, and as they began to substitute Greek and Roman philosophical ideas for scriptural ideas, that's where the cleavage really became. But the bedrock, the foundation for anti-Semitism, could be traced right to Augustine of Hippo. That's where it started. He was not anti-Semitic himself, but the theological motion, things that he set in motion, caused this change. Okay, the group is now vilified. Everybody thinks those dirty, filthy Jews. Pass laws against the target group. That's stage four. And then stage five is all you have to do is enforce the laws. So identify the group, marginalize the group, vilify them, pass laws against them, enforce it. Remember that the Holocaust was a legal event. Hitler was legally elected. He was legally made the Chancellor of Germany. The Reichstag, through a series of just a few laws, I've talked about this in my briefing pack on persecution when we go through the history of this in Germany. The first one was the, I'm doing this out of memory now, the Verordnung des Reichspräsidenten zum Schutz von Volk und Staat, the Ordinance of the Reichspresident for the Defense of People and State. And that basically suspended the Bill of Rights. The second was the Ermächtigungsgesetz, which allowed Hitler to rule by executive order, our equivalent of executive order. This may sound familiar to you. Okay, and the third one was called the Heimtückgesetz, the treachery law. The treachery law said that opposition to the Nazi party's policies were opposition to the best interests of Germany and were therefore treason. See, in this country, we can be Democrats, Libertarians, Republicans, non-committals, and we can still support the country. We're just debating what's best for the country. We have the right to do that, theoretically. That's going away, by the way, very rapidly. But in that thing, they said, okay, what we believe is Nazis and what's good for Germany are together, therefore, if you oppose the Nazi party, it's treason. Those three laws, and it was all over. It was all done on an emergency basis because the Reichstag had burned. Hitler created this fictitious national emergency. Hindenburg bought it. Hindenburg was old and dying at the time. He died about 6 months later. And so he said, all right, go ahead. It's just temporary. We're just going to do what we have to do. That's why the day they passed the Patriot Act, my knees were knocking because I knew exactly what we were doing. I went, this is not going to just be for terrorists. Mark my words. And I was really upset. I drove out of the post office in Hayden one day, and I'm listening to Jay Sekulow defending all of this, and I'm screaming at him. You know, so either scream at the radio in the car or throw popcorn at the television at home. One way or another. Okay, now both of these forms can blend together. There are two general methods of persecution, and I'm not telling you this to be idle, because if we ever are persecuted for your faith, you have to understand this dynamic, because your faith will depend upon it, and that's the target of all persecution. Both forms of those persecution can blend. There are two methods: co-opting, where they get you to gradually compromise your ideas and what you believe about God, about the scriptures, about everything else related to your Christianity, and say, all right, well, you can believe that, but just leave this other stuff out. Or you can believe that, but just keep it to yourself. No proselytizing. That's what the secularist crowd would like us to do today, because we're supposed to respect diversity. Unfortunately, they don't respect ours. Okay? And there are two religions that are aggressively proselytic, I don't know if that's a word, that they proselytize, Christianity and Islam, okay? Not so much Judaism or Hinduism or Buddhism for that matter. But that's why you need to understand. The first effort is to get you to co-opt and dilute what you believe. Okay? And today, the belief system is what I call secular relativistic, dialectical secular relativism. It's dialectical in nature. It doesn't believe in absolute truths. It's constantly changing, but it's absolute in saying that you should believe that. Okay, and as a result, since that's where the mainliners are pushing us, Christians can't go along with that. So how do you live in that kind of an environment? The second one is coercion. This is one who anybody who's ever been under persecution understands. It can be emotional, in your family or at work, financial or exclusion from society's functions and the ability to learn an income, confiscation of your property, imprisonment, torture, and death. That's it. That's all you got to worry about. So it's co-opting, and they'll always try that first. Whereas Hitler was coercing the Jews, the Endlösung, the final solution, was nothing but coercion. We're just going to take care of these filthy Jews and get rid of them. What he tried to do with both the Catholic Church and the Protestant churches was to co-opt them, and he used two different methods for either of them. And every time the churches would draw a line in the sand, Hitler would step over it. Do you know if the churches had just held themselves firm, he would have been stopped? Okay. What is the goal of persecution? It comes down to really a very simple thing. It's an effort to get you to abandon your belief system in favor of the person who's persecuting you. Every society has a Weltanschauung. No society can function without it. If the church does not provide pressure on government to conform to its system of morality, government will invent one of its own. Even the atheists in the Soviet Union were religious about their atheism, and it had a whole system. For a Christian, the question can be summed up in one simple question. As Jesus said to Peter, "Who do you say I am?" Can you still say it when you're being tortured, when you can't tell which way is up, when your kids have been killed, when your family's rejected you, when all of these things have happened? Can you still say, "Who do you say I am?" Well, you are the Son of God, the Mashiach. I know who you are. There are two groups of Christians. This is very important in a time of persecution. Those who think they are Christians, and our churches are just loaded with them. They have no idea. And those who truly are. How do you tell the difference? And Wormbrand said, and he wrote a very smart booklet, which I don't think was ever published. I read the manuscript from it. But he said that you never want to trust anybody that doesn't walk with a limp. That's my summary of it. And I remember that because 10 years ago I was doing a lot of mixed martial arts stuff, and one night I blew my meniscus in my right knee. It was during a ground fight, and I was having a great time. But this guy was a little stronger than I was, and all of a sudden you could hear this pop in the whole dojo, and my knee went. I never thought there could be so much pain. But ever since then, my knee will still telegraph me to this day. Ah, remember me? Remember what happened 10 years ago? Never trust anybody who doesn't walk with a limp. Wormbrand says the only way that you can tell the difference between the fake Christians and the real Christians is in a time of trial, and then only by what the people do, not by what they say. Because it was amazing the number of people that caved into the pressures in both Nazi Germany and in the Soviet bloc when the pressure was put on them and turned their brothers and sisters in, people you would not even dream. So we always said ahead of time, you have to know who you can trust. Let's look at what is going on in terms of the persecution around the world. This is a sort of a short speech, and so we have to keep it brief today. There are three groups that are really under duress worldwide. Anti-Semitism, especially in Europe, is on the rise, not so much here at this stage of the game. It has about a 50-50 split of attacks. About 50% of the attacks in Europe that are coming on Jews walking down the street, especially in France or Germany or Belgium, tend to be Islamic in nature. Way out of proportion to the Islamic population in Europe, I should say. But the other 50% is part of this latent anti-Semitism which the Europeans have never, ever managed to shake. It's always been there. And it comes from, well, I believe that at a spiritual level, there's something that Satan wishes to do with this. But at a human level, it comes through this anti-Semitism which roared down Western Christianity and Eastern Christianity even after the split in 1054, and then into Protestantism as well. It wasn't until the 1800s that evangelicals began to say, you know, we're looking at this whole Jewish thing a little differently. And that we think God has something going on with his people here. And that we've really had two streams moving throughout salvation history. And look at all these prophecies. Wow, it says Jews have to be back there. Because if they're going to fulfill this, they've got to be back in Israel. You know. Now, there was a group. I just ran across this. I'm talking to a college professor in Mexico City. His book's in Spanish, so you can't read it. I was a linguistics major, so I had to tuck a couple of languages under my belt. And it's called The Coming Holocaust. El Colapso del Occidente. It's The Collapse of the West and the Coming Holocaust and the Repeat of the Holocaust. He has gone through, his life's project now is to do an entire history of anti-Semitism from the get to the go. And I ran across it. There was a group of Catholic prelates in the 1920s called the Amici Israel. They formed a group. It had a lot of bishops, a number of cardinals, a lot of priests who wanted to become friends of the Jewish people, abolish the Good Friday imprecations against the Jews, also to promote the return of Jews to Zion or whatever. Well, the Vatican Inquisition Office, which is now called the Office for the Propagation, what is it called now? I can't remember. It used to be called the Oficio Santo, the Holy Office, which had the Inquisition 400 years ago, went crazy, and they suppressed this group. And very little was known about this group of Catholic prelates that wanted to support the Jews and deal with issues such as the Jewish ghetto in Rome until the Vatican archives were opened in 2003. And just popped up on the radar. I'm sorry, that was a sidebar. Okay. Anti-Semitism is on the rise. Old line European anti-Semitism. Christians, the second group is Christians inside the Islamic and communist worlds. The communist world includes China, Vietnam, Laos. There is still persecution of Christians and North Korea today. The biggest persecution is throughout the Islamic world, where a project of genocide is now underway, even though the world media try to suppress this right now. But if you go all the way from Nigeria to Indonesia, Christians in one form or another are being persecuted. They're being murdered, raped, killed. Their churches and homes being bombed. It goes on and on and on. Hundreds and hundreds have been killed over the last 10 years. I should say thousands at this stage of the game. Just in the last, I can't remember the dates now, 4 to 8 weeks, we had hundreds of people killed in Nigeria. There was the bombing in Kenya, what's going on with the Christians in Syria. So this is the second group. There are some non-Christian, non-Jewish groups, such as the Falun Gong in China, which are being persecuted. There are persecutions of some Buddhists in parts of China, conflicts between Hindus and Muslims. But of the two groups that are receiving the brunt of it, it's still Jews and Christians. Let's look at anti-Semitism in Europe. There's a strong anti-Semitism in Islamic countries coupled with a vitriolic hatred of Israel. And surprisingly enough, some of the biggest supporters of this are the people like the World Council of Churches. The World Council of Churches, remember, never saw a communist it didn't like. They were very left. They didn't want to talk about persecution. I think they either threw Warren Brown or his son out of a meeting one time when he tried to tell them what was going on with Christians behind the Iron Curtain, but they had all this idea of rapprochement and we'll make nicey-nicey with the Orthodox Romanians and others. They didn't want to hear about it. It is also interesting to me that a lot of the denominations being persecuted in the Middle East today also have a dislike of Israel and Jews because of their eschatology and their theology. Now, we need to pray for them and help them as our brothers and sisters, but I do find it amusing that God's promise to Abraham, blessing and curse, seems to keep coming back over and over and over again. But there it is. It's not a clean picture. It's really not a clean picture. There are many mainline denominations that are just showering imprecations like the World Council of Churches against Israel, say, for example, and the wall and the partition and the apartheid they're causing, and absolutely silent when it comes to the genocide going against Christians right now. European politics, having lived in Europe for an amount of time, are prisoners of their own political correctness and ideologies. They recognize they have a serious problem, but they can't talk about it. Only a few voices like Melanie Phillips and a couple of others, she's in London, are willing to talk about this type of change culturally that's going on. There's a new survey of 5,100 Jews living in France, Belgium, Germany, Sweden, Italy, Hungary, Romania, and Latvia that was done in September of 2012 and ended last month. Here's what it's going to determine. A quarter of respondents, these are Jewish people now, said they have avoided visiting visibly Jewish places, wearing visibly Jewish symbols such as a yarmulke for fear of assault and anti-Semitism. The numbers were even higher in Sweden, France, and Belgium, where 49, 40, and 36% said that was the case. In Hungary, this is one of the danger countries, 91% of the Jews living in Hungary have said that anti-Semitism has increased in the past 5 years. That figure was 88% in France, where you know there are no-go zones in certain Islamic areas. Even the police won't go into these areas. And these areas are being run under Sharia law. And also, let's see, 87% in Belgium, 80% in Sweden. They were lower in Germany, Italy, and Britain. There was a 2011 study which the Bielefeld University undertook. More than 40% of citizens 16 years old in seven European countries agree with the statement that Israel is carrying out a war of extermination against the Palestinians. Remember the idea of Palestine and anti-Semitism. These two things in Europe are locked together. Okay. Europeans have launched attacks on both ritual Jewish and Muslim ritual practices, notably circumcision, which is practiced both by Muslims and by Jews, and ritual slaughter, either kashrut or halal, depending on which language you're speaking. But they're fighting that. They're saying that, you know, this male circumcision is a terrible thing. It's wounding the babies, blah, blah, blah. Very secular. Remember, Europe abandoned its Christian roots following World War II. It had been doing so since the middle of the 1800s. You know why the Germans were unable to mount a defense, why the church was unable to mount a defense? Is starting in the mid-1800s, they began to adopt higher biblical criticism and abandoning the scripture as the word of God and using it as a root basis and examining the scriptures as if they were an object to be studied in and of and critiqued themselves. By the time you got to 1900, various forms of witchcraft and other things were on the rise in Europe. They had abandoned the idea that the scriptures were infallible or that they had a message for us, which was one of the interesting things that Dietrich Bonhoeffer did. Remember, he was executed by the Nazis right at the end of the war, is that when he had his underground seminaries, he would have his students read the scriptures as if God were talking to them. I mean, this idea would have been laughed at in the main seminaries in Germany. And so when they came up against another worldview, the very strong ideology of National Socialism, they were unable to stand. The same thing's happening in Great Britain today. See, Britain has spent the last 50 years chewing out its own heritage. I call it chewing out your own guts. Rejecting Western civilization, rejecting Christianity, and now they have a large Islamic Muslim population that doesn't suffer from all of the foibles that the secularists suffer from. They don't care about the diversity ideas. Their idea is to spread Islam, and the secularists are going crazy in the media trying to defend their culture against Islamic culture because they've been telling us for 50 to 60 years that everything is wrong with Western culture. And so if you keep telling yourselves everything's wrong when it comes time to defend it, what's there? You hear the same thing in the United States today. We are not a perfect country. But all you have heard come out of academia is what's wrong with the United States. This started when I was in college in the 60s. So what is it any surprise that people talk about that, you know? More persecution in the Islamic world of Christians in the last few months. Hundreds of people have been killed by Islamists in the name of Allah. Nigeria, Somalia, Sudan, well, North Sudan, actually, Egypt, Syria, Iran, Iraq, Algeria, Pakistan, Indonesia. Christians are routinely assaulted, murdered, raped. Christianity in the West is fighting to maintain its footing in the marketplace of public ideas. We're not at persecution levels, but people are starting to have to pay the price for believing what they do. Conflicts are arising between Christian belief and government requirements. Look at the fight over contraceptive and the Catholic Church. Of course, I was screaming at the radio again. Within a week of the Catholic bishops taking a stand on their belief about having to provide abortion services, they said, we need gun control. And I'm screaming, no, you idiots! Don't you understand this? If you're going to appeal to the First Amendment of the Constitution, you can't shred the Second. It's a package. And they don't understand this, you know. The global press is not covering the war on Christianity. They fail to notice the anti-Semitism in Europe, but prattle on about the supposed anti-Islamic intolerant atmosphere that there is in Europe. why the lopsided reporting? I mean, did anybody really think an Arab Spring was breaking out 24 months ago, 36 months ago? I didn't. Once you knew the Muslim Brotherhood was involved and you knew their history, I knew where this was going. You know, but they're all prancing around, even though some of their reporters are being assaulted and raped in Tahrir Square. Well, that's minor problems, you know. But I knew where it was going. I knew it was going to be really bad on the Copts, the Coptic Christians who were there. They're one of the oldest branches of Christianity. They split off from Rome in around the middle of the 6th century after the Council of Chalcedon, and we don't have time to go into that theological discussion. So the press didn't believe it. You know, Jews have been driven out of the Middle East. Now the push is to eliminate Christians from the Middle East. The global press is silent, and even mainline denominations are chiming in. So that's the situation we're facing around the world. Here in this country, I wish I had time to do this, but we don't today because we're running short here. Secularism has enshrined political correctness in the goddess tolerance. Okay, we weren't founded on a principle of tolerance. Did you know that, by the way, in this country? We were not founded on tolerance. We were founded on freedom. There's a difference. This is very important to understand. Tolerance is one person tolerating you, allowing you to do it. What if they unallow you to do that or disallow you to do that? The problem with the debates we have today, they're being conducted in sound bites. They're using ad hominem arguments like blankophobe, you know. If you want to say, wait a minute, there's a problem with Islam. Oh, you're Islamophobic. And that's supposed to end the conversation right there. I go, yeah, but wait a minute. Let's just, you know, time out. Let's look at what's going on here. Okay, and they're not interested in that because we're no longer rotating around truth. We're rotating around consensus. Beware of the word consensus whenever you hear about it. The outrage is selective in its control of hatred, and that's the other issue. You shouldn't be hateful, okay? Some groups are castigated for their supposed hate. Others are given a pass. We hear that some groups can be racist, other groups cannot be racist. And so it never matters what's going on in reality. Those rules are applied, and that's how it goes. Now, Christians are the target of all of this. It's been the target ever since the ACLU kicked in and began to push God out of the public schools and all of these things. Now they're trying to push it out of the marketplace of ideas. And these concepts, this is the danger we're in. You're hearing the concept, one right trumps another right. We have the right to freedom of speech, freedom of religion, but now these other new rights are trumping, and this is the battle. This right trumps that right. There's got to be a winner and a loser, and that's the battle you're seeing play out in the area of Obamacare and some of the other issues. Where did that come from, and what are these new rights, and what's the foundation of these new rights? And both the Republicans and the Democrats, Socialist Party D and Socialist Party R, they both, over the last 20 years, have contributed to this assault on the Bill of Rights, both each for their own pet projects. And that's why I said, if I had time here, we would sit here and I would read you a horror list of what's going on out there. You go, wow, is that really going on here? Yeah, it is. And what happens when over here this hostility to Christianity merges up with the trumping of the rights and what I call the attack of the comma butts? Okay? The people will say, well, yeah, you have the right to, say, for example, bear arms, okay? You have the right to bear arms. It says so in the Constitution. It says it will not be infringed. And they say, well, you have the right to bear arms, comma, but, now, as soon as you hear that, you don't have that right anymore because they start the list. And the lists of all of the comma butts are growing longer on all of the rights every day, and the courts are upholding the comma butts rather than the rights. So this is where we are. I don't have enough time to go on to it all. I am urging people to become involved. If you really believe that we need to become involved, then do something. But you must understand where we are headed. We're in a paradigm shift. I don't care if we were founded as a Christian country or what these people say. That's passé. That was 250 years ago. It's not the same beast today. So you have to recognize what's coming, recognize what it will demand of you and me, and how we have to function in that area. Remember to pray for those persecuted, pray for those persecuting as well, and pray for their governments and our government as well. We need to pray for righteousness in the state, the county, the country, in the province or parish, wherever it happens to be that people hear this. This is important. Do something. Help the persecuted. Keep talking. Talk to people about truth. Your motto is, I will not sit down. I will not shut up. When it comes to these issues, because that's what they're trying to do. Remember the stage of marginalization? That's what the push has been on in this country, to marginalize. We will not do that. So those are just that's a brief tour through anatomy of persecution. Remember that your goal on that day when all things are made known is to hear Jesus say to you, "Well done, good and faithful servant." But you have to make up your mind now how you are going to behave, because when the time of trial comes to you, it will come very, very suddenly when you least expect it. And you must know now, I've seen it. I've seen pastors and others collapse when a moral issue came upon them like that. Thank you for your time. Pray for us. If you want to hear my show, it's on the air. I don't have any control over this. The stations pick it up from the network when they want. But Tom Reed runs it on Sundays at noon on 6:30 a.m. 6:30 a.m. dial at noon on Sundays. And it's a 90-minute, and we cover economics, politics, and religion. It's a rough show this week. You want to hear? I did it. It was a real rough show. You want to hear what's going on to average Americans? Listen to this show for 90 minutes. It'll scare the willies out of you. So we'll go from there. Thank you very much. God bless you all. Shabbat shalom.